You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Jason Kelly. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the world of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Bloomberg Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, only on Bloomberg Radio.
Then what you see?
Yeah, I think Jamie Dimon may be trying to kind of warn folks about what you saw back in the final few months of 2018 might just be what you're going to get in the future. Jamie Dimon of JP Morgan, of course, we're talking about. He put out his annual and rather lengthy letter to shareholders. We got a read of that early this morning. I just put it out on Twitter at Carol Masser. It is among our most read stories on the Bloomberg. So here with more, Michelle Davis, Bloomberg News finance reporter in our Bloomberg Interactive Broker studio in New York, who is up bright and early. Read it, looked over it, wrote a story.
So wrote two stories.
So the big takeaway, or we seem to keep pulling out, about how the market volatility that we saw in the final months of 2018 might be, and these are his words, might be a harbinger of things to come.
Right. So it's a bit of a shift from what we are used to hearing from Dimon. You know, in his last annual letter, it was all about how bullish he was on the economy, how perhaps this recovery was really, you know, accelerating and gaining strength. And in this one, he really just touches on the idea that the economy might not actually be accelerating, you know, growth might not be accelerating, and there could be some scary times ahead.
Jason's like a 180 like the Fed.
It really is amazing. Really? I mean, this letter has become, I mean, as Michelle knows better than we do, Carol, I mean, it really has been, you know, almost like Warren Buffett-esque in terms of people, you know, sort of picking through it and trying to understand, in part just because, obviously because of what Jamie Dimon's firm does, but also because of the corridors of power that he's walking. What does this tell us, or maybe synthesize this, if you can, Michelle, with the rest of what you guys are hearing on the Wall Street team about big banks and their view of the world?
Well, you know, what I found most interesting about this letter is that he really doubled down on this call to fellow CEOs to to be, you know, their own, not statesmen, but, you know, to be the driving force for change in this, you know, increasingly politically divided world. He has always been, very, you know, very public about his views on policy, but this is the first time I had heard him say.
Wasn't that like Steve Schwarzman? Did Steve Schwarzman do the same thing in a note to some of their investments? Jason, I'm trying to think who it was who did something very similar.
I think it was Larry Fink.
Was it Larry Fink? Forgive
Larry
me.
Fink. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're hearing these guys who oversee a lot of money flowing around our economy and our world, really, kind of saying that you need to think about these things like your impact,
right,
socially, globally, environment, all those things.
Yeah, I mean, there's an interest. One of my favorite quotes from the letter was he talked about how, you know, in the past, boards and advisors would tell company CEOs to keep their heads down and stay out of the line of fire. And he says now the opposite is true. If companies and CEOs don't get involved in public policy issues, you know, making progress on all these problems that he's identified will be difficult.
Well, and it's interesting to hear him say this, too, because, and again, Michelle, you know this better than us, he has suffered some slings and arrows for taking on the president, in President Trump, that is. He's had a sort of on-again, off-again relationship to some extent, been called out by the president and vice versa. I mean, at one point, he sort of rather unwisely said, you know, he felt like he could beat him in an election. So this is not for the faint of heart, you know, sort of putting your head up and making your opinion known.
Exactly. And one has to wonder, you know, why he is, right, you know, making these statements at you. When you read it, you know, a lot of it has to do more with the broader economy in the world than with, you know, his thoughts on JP Morgan. Don't get me wrong, he does talk about how they run the business, but most of the new things were, you know, about broader things.
Well, and it's interesting, too, Daniel Pinto, who's JP Morgan's co-president and head of its investment bank, said in his own letter, right, he put out something on Thursday, you write this in your story about, he too talked about recent volatility could be pinned on investors speculating that a downturn was coming sooner than previously expected. I mean, we are at a really funny time. And when someone like Jamie Dimon of JP Morgan comes out and says this, we sit up and take notice because there's a lot of conflicting signals, whether you're looking at the Fed, whether you look at what, you know, the quick inversion in the yield curve, what we're hearing in terms of corporate earnings projections. Like, there's a lot of, I think, conflicting things going on. And so we're trying to grasp, especially from someone like Jamie, who really has a big picture view.
And I guess one just important thing is that, you know, he makes it clear that they're not necessarily expecting a recession. He just wants to be sure the firm is ready and prepared for the prospect of one, you know, to be the port in the storm like they were the last time all this happened.
Well, and also notable, and Michelle, you pointed this out in your notes, that, you know, he talks about cloud computing. Obviously, that's of great interest here in Silicon Valley, where I'm sitting, that you do have big tech, big finance companies essentially embracing big tech in a much, much more meaningful way and becoming big voices on those issues, which, again, other CEOs will take note of.
Totally. Yeah. He actually, you know, admitted that he thinks he was initially too skeptical of cloud computing.
Yeah. Right. Well, at least he's evolved, right? He can change his opinion, which I kind of like that. Michelle, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Michelle Davis, finance reporter at Bloomberg News. Check her out on Twitter. She's joining us in our Bloomberg Interactive Broker studio. And as I mentioned, Jason, I put out Jamie Dimon's letter. I forget how many pages.
51. And Michelle's story is, not surprisingly, one of the most read on the Bloomberg Today, following, and maybe this isn't an accident, following a story about Nomura and their job cuts, CEO unveiling a plan there to save $1 billion. So when you synthesize all this and you start to think about, okay, volatility is a harbinger of things to come, other, you know, big bank CEOs starting to figure out how they can save money, you do start to, there's some pattern recognition here, I think.
Well, I agree. And I feel like in the last week or two, we've seen a lot of moves within the financial sector in terms of whether it's private equity, whether it's the banks, people hiring people, letting folks go, kind of thinking about what's going to come in and how the financial sector and industry is really changing because of a bunch of different factors.
Taking care of business.
So the last read on small business found that optimism among small companies in the U.S. improved in February, snapping a five-month losing streak that was the longest in two decades. So, Jason, optimism coming from some brighter views of future conditions there. We'll get another reading in about a week. But Capital One is also checking out the small business community. They got their own reading. And here to tell us about it is Jen Flynn. She's Capital One's head of small business. She joins us on this Thursday on the phone from McLean, Virginia. Jen, great to have you here. I love talking about the small business community because I do feel like, you know, I can't say it enough, it's the backbone of the U.S. economy. And
that's a lot of love, Carol.
It is a lot of love. But I think it gives us a really good idea of how things are going. Tell me, remind us of the metrics, what you look into, and what you guys found out.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Carol.
Yeah.
We at Capital One also love this sector. We believe it's such an important part of the economy. We survey 500 small businesses, and, you know, this is our opportunity to pulse small business owners about things that are important to them, what's top of mind, better understand their challenges, and get a feel for their optimism.
And so what jumped out at you this time around, especially as it relates to optimism? You know, Carol sort of teed you up for that nicely in terms of the optimism that I guess we've been seeing from small businesses of late.
Absolutely. And, you know, as Carol mentioned, you know, we've been doing the survey for 10 years, and we saw a nice spike in optimism last fall with our survey. We did see that dip a bit this time. I would say small business owners remain cautiously optimistic. Mm. There's still more than half that cite good or excellent business conditions, but small business owners are worried about the recession or the stock market volatility, right? They see the same volatility in the market that we do, and they're keeping a close eye on things.
So does that mean, Jen, they're retrenching in terms of hiring, investing, expansion, all that good stuff?
And that's where the cautious optimism comes in. They're still investing. They're still planning to hire. And they're still taking steps to grow their business.
And so, Jen, when they do go out to hire, are they finding people? Because, you know, we've been talking about this tight labor market for a couple of years now, it feels like.
Absolutely. Look, it remains a competitive labor market. You know, small businesses are competing for the same talent as large companies. I'd say they're doing a good job offering competitive salaries, and they're promoting things like creative office perks and flexible work arrangements. You know, we're finding small business owners are getting creative in ways to attract and retain that talent. For example, we're seeing our customers reinvest the cash they earn on their Spark credit card or Spark savings back into their employees in forms of health insurance and bonuses and other types of employee benefits that are becoming real differentiators.
So if you had to, based on, because like you said, you've been doing this, Jen, for a while. You said 10 years, right? So I'm just trying to think. So we're just coming off the recession, right?
Yes.
Okay. So based on kind of that 10-year pack of data, how would you, I mean, is the glass half full for a small business? Is it half empty?
I would say it's half full. You know, we know this population really well. And, you know, we continue to be struck every year in every survey by their resilience. And we see that in the data here, too. This group is used to change. And, you know, that optimism is coming through in this survey.
So, Jen, we're on the verge of tax day, and obviously taxes have been front of mind really for the last year and a half with the tax bill that went through last year in 2018. How is that going to manifest itself for small businesses? Because I feel like we get a very mixed picture when it comes to consumers on that front.
Oh, absolutely. And you get a mixed picture with small businesses as well. About half of the respondents say tax reform was good for their business and they're expecting to pay less. There's also the other half that expects to pay either the same or more. So
wow.
I think it's still
a bit
of a wait and see.
That surprises me a little bit. Does that surprise
you? Yeah, it surprised us as well.
All right. Wow. It's just something to think to, you know, Jen, because Jason and I keep repeating over and over again, and we were just coming off of our discussion about Jamie Dimon's annual letter to shareholders. And just we're in this funny little time where I think we're all grasping on information to try and get a much clearer picture of where we go from here.
Absolutely. And you see that come through in the data. You see that come through when we talk to our customers. And yet there's still that underlying resilience of we're going to move forward. We're going to invest in our businesses. Mm. We're going to continue to hire and chase our dreams.
All
and,
right.
You know, we at Capital One are here to support those businesses along the way.
Well, great to check in with you. Jen Flynn, head of small business at Capital One, joining us on the phone from McLean, Virginia. Interesting, right?
Yeah. So whose sentiment is going to win?
I guess, is
part of it. And I was fascinated by that.
And sentiment's a great word to use, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And look, if you're a small business, you're having to make decisions on the fly. You don't have generally a lot of wiggle room or a lot of cushion. So we'll see.
Right. And sentiment can certainly and does impact activity, actual actions.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers.
Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts Gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Johann Schmiegel, you've got the world's highest IQ.
Yes, 247.
Wow, did you know that thanks to Salesforce with Einstein AI, everyone's smarter? Now everyone's an Einstein, just like you.
But I'm the smartest.
Not anymore. With connected data and trusted AI, everyone can give customers experiences they've only dreamed of. Oh, look, here's a few Einsteins now.
Hey, hi.
Hola, amigo.
Everyone's an Einstein?
It's okay, Johann, let it happen. The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
So, as I promised you, we were going to have a ton of our most read stories on the Bloomberg today, and this next one is on that list. Shares of Tesla tanking thanks to a delivery drop. Let's get opposing views on Tesla. Ross Gerber, very familiar to our Bloomberg audience, president and CEO at Gerber Kawasaki Wealth and Investment. He owns approximately 10 million shares of Tesla, owns a Model 3. Ross with us from Santa Monica, California, also familiar to our audience. David Kudla, he's CEO and chief investment strategist at Mainstay Capital Management. They've got $2.5 billion in assets under management. He joins us from Michigan. David, I want to start with you. You believe we are clearly past peak Tesla. How come?
Well, we've had a very disappointing number here on deliveries for first quarter. Certainly, if we look at the overall number, we had 90,000, about almost 91,000 vehicles delivered last quarter. We're down to 63,000 this quarter, 31% decline. And that's before the wave of competition coming domestically and globally. We're just seeing the initial part of that coming for Tesla. So that's why we think we've seen peak Tesla and it's behind us.
Ross, you clearly maybe don't agree that we've seen peak Tesla. You're long this, about $10 million worth of shares, I believe. So what's right. The case going forward?
Yeah, that was incorrect. Yeah, I own $10 million worth of shares.
Did I freak you out? Okay. Did I freak you out? Jason's like, I think you said $10
million. Well, I want a lot more money today, that's for sure.
Sorry. I read too fast. Okay. $10 million worth.
Saying it's peak Tesla is kind of like saying, like, this is peak society. You know what I mean? Like, this is the beginning of Tesla, and this is what Tesla is struggling with, is rolling out their product internationally and all the, you know, byproducts of releasing such a compelling car. And that's why we saw kind of a drop in Model S sales, was because the performance Model 3 is a very compelling alternative to a Model S. And I think they saw a little bit of cannibalization because of that. But I don't think that that's a big problem for Tesla longer term, because it's not their goal to be a high-end car maker. It's their goal to mass-produce EV cars. So, you know, this is the transition they're making from sort of a high-end car maker to a mass-production, global-scale car company here. So it's a very exciting time for Tesla, and as well a challenging time as they continue to, I guess, deal with, you know, disrupting an industry. But the only competition that's coming for Tesla is really from China. And when you look at the rest of the car companies, you know, they're in desperation mode now, just trying to, you know, wiggle their way into some strategy to counter Tesla. So we're seeing that, you know, in Germany in particular, you know, and the rest mm-hmm. of the world is going green. So Tesla's in the right spot.
Well, so David, come on in on that. Respond to Ross.
Well, if that's if that's the case, Ross, that they are driving towards that car for mass appeal for the mass audience, mass customer, then they need to be able to make a car profitably at $35,000. They need to be able to produce and sell a car below $44,000, and they've struggled to get there. The car makers that are going to eat their lunch in that regard are the Chinese automakers. They're coming online, and they're coming online in a big way. By 2020, they'll have enough capacity in China alone to fulfill all the EV demand globally and more. They have so many EV automakers in China that are coming online that the Chinese government last year had to curtail, actually restricted the licenses of Chinese startups allowed to manufacture EV vehicles. That's how many automakers are getting into the EV market. It's not about traditional OEM automakers that are wondering about a strategy and how do they get into this market. The market in 2019, there's 2.6 million EVs expected to be bought in 2019. It goes up from there. We're on an S-curve of EV demand. There is going to be an EV glut on the market in 2020.
Yeah, see, I agree with a lot of what you're saying in that China is definitely the biggest competitor to Tesla. I completely agree with that. But I don't think their ability to scale is as good as they claim. And I think a lot of the car companies, and the reason they're cutting back was a lot of it was just bad investment for them. And so, you know, China, especially Volvo and Geely and BYD, I think are the other leaders in this industry. But Tesla has a brand value in China that's unbelievable. I mean, it's better than the iPhone. The Chinese people love Tesla. It's about being an American brand and what it stands for. So I think EV demand and supply will increase dramatically, but I think demand's going to increase much, much quicker than supply. And Tesla's going to be the top of the charts there, as well as other successful companies.
So, and I'll start with you, David, how much do you worry about the fact that I'm sitting here in front of my Bloomberg terminal and Elon Musk is in front of the SEC, Tesla's in front of the SEC over his Twitter habits? I mean, that doesn't feel normal for a CEO. How much does that play into the thesis here?
Well, it plays in a great deal. You know, we're focusing a lot on Q1 deliveries and looking down the road at what the potential is globally for Tesla and talking a lot about the brand. And I agree with Ross Gerber. It is a strong brand, and a lot of that brand is because of Elon Musk. And if Elon Musk were gone tomorrow or gone at some point, a lot of that brand equity is in Elon. And, you know, in Elon we trust. I think he has some devout followers. And there's been some missteps that have tarnished Elon and tarnished the brand. And there's a real risk, you know, investigations by the SEC, by the DOJ, now, you know, we have the ongoing concerns about the tweets on production levels and restrictions for him as a CEO. He continues to find ways to get in trouble. He's not your typical CEO. Some of the followers like that, but some of the regulators and others, you know, whether it's the Nassau with SpaceX and others, they find it problematic. So, you know, that's a double-edged sword.
Well, and just one last question to you, Ross, because let's follow up on that. I mean, if there isn't an Elon Musk as CEO of Tesla, you know, does this be a problem? Ardana Hull is following what's going on with Mr. Musk down in downtown New York, and she says one of the big questions has always been, could the SEC seek or Judge Nathan rule that Musk should not be CEO? So far, it doesn't seem to be that way. Just got about 30 seconds left here. I mean,
yeah, that's not going to happen. The SEC's job is not to take out CEOs over a tweet. I think what people don't understand, if you look at all the pictures, Elon's smiling on his way into court, because while the conservative people of the world look at this as, oh, he did a bad tweet and oh, he's always in trouble, people hate the government. You know, they love that Elon's standing up to the government. He's gotten a million new followers since this all went down. Controversy is part of Elon Musk and the brand, and it's made him a folk hero. He has almost as many fans as the Kardashians.
So all right.
It's part of the strategy. Keep that
Got
in mind.
It. Hey, Ross, we got to run. David, we got to run. Ross Gerber over at Gerber Kawasaki. David Kudlow, Mainstay Capital Management, just walking through on Tesla. This is Bloomberg.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
Hey, how about you let me drive?
Oh, no. No, no, no.
Who's going to drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
Just drive, baby.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
And it is time for that Drive to the Close here on a Thursday. Joining us, Yana Barton, Equity Portfolio Manager at Eaton Vance, joining us on the phone from Boston. Yana, great to be with you. A Florida Gator, I understand, so nothing wrong with that.
Thanks for having me.
There you go. So where are we in this cycle? Because we get, you know, some mixed signals here. You know, we've been talking about small businesses. We're hearing from Jamie Dimon. As you're investing into this, how much uncertainty are you encountering?
I think today's action and even year-to-date action showcases that there's plenty of uncertainty. And I think in terms of the cycle, we're a later. This is definitely an economic recovery that has lasted over 130-plus months. But if you look at the strength of the recovery, it's not the strongest, nor has the bull market been the strongest. It certainly has been the longest running one. So there's plenty of uncertainty, but I think when folks are looking around for opportunities longer term, the key, I think, input to that is that global growth remains the number one scarcity, you know, and if you know that growth is difficult to come by, I think it puts a premium to those companies and those investment opportunities that have growth rates that are in excess of the market, in excess of their industry. So growth is the name of the game, and it's less about style definition and more about stock opportunities.
So tell us about the Eaton Vance Focused Growth Opportunities Fund, and it is beating just about all of its peers, about three quarters of its peers to be exact, over the past 5 years, returning on average more than 13% annually. You're involved in picking names for that fund. So talk to us, because it reads like a who's who of corporate America.
It definitely does. And thank you so much for the opportunity to talk about the Focused Growth Opportunities Fund. You know, I am lucky enough to be representing the fund in front of you. I actually co-manage it with my partner, Lou Piantedosi, and we have a team of about eight analysts that are superstars. And the way I would describe it is it's a strategy that is really focused on finding opportunities that we will be talking about tomorrow. So it's the slogan is invest in tomorrow today. And we have about 25 to about 40 positions. Currently we have 35. And we're seeking growth. The greatest thing about growth is that it doesn't come from just one or two sectors that traditionally have been defined as growth. We buy all types of growth companies, whether they're secular in nature, stable, or cyclical in nature. And you're correct, Carol, to note that majority of the portfolio does lean secular growth, because those are investable opportunities that we can ride out irrespective of the backdrop, whether we're talking macro, monetary policy, whatever it is, because those are the companies that have the TAM that's going their way. They're the disruptors or enablers, and that's why propensity of the portfolio is really to be in that sort of trifecta of opportunities, which is within consumer healthcare and information technology.
So let me just throw out, because our audience loves specifics and they love names. So at the top of the pack, you've got Amazon, you've got Alphabet, you've got Visa, you've got Charles Schwab, you've got Walt Disney, Palo Alto Networks, United Health, Salesforce, and Coca-Cola, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I can go on and on about every single one of those companies, but starting from the top and kind of walking my way down, I think, you know, when you think about big picture and you think about the e-commerce opportunity, we're talking about a retail pie of about $25 trillion, and e-commerce continues to be less than 10% of that. And then you think about cloud computing and where we are in that, and AWS having the opportunity to really fulfill that void. One interesting question that I've been getting this week is obviously about Lyft and the IPO that's coming up, which is Pinterest. And what many are not talking about is if you actually read the IPO material, you find one common sort of theme, and that is AWS is the infrastructure that is enabling these logistic and these sort of new companies to come to the market. So they're a clear winner in a lot of different ways. You talked about software companies, mm-hmm. which, again, benefit from the cloud computing transformation. You talked about a couple of other ones within the healthcare space. These are big, we play big themes, but we're opportunistic as well and tactical. I think one timely opportunity that might not be highlighted in the top 10 is within the healthcare space outside of the service names, but actually within biotech. The sector is trading at a discount to the market, so there's a sentiment, obviously, downdraft there, but you know, you think about big picture theme and an unmet medical need of rare diseases or big problems we haven't solved for. There are something like 7,000 rare diseases, and majority of them are genetic in nature, and almost 95% of them have no therapies, no known therapies. So these companies within the biotech space are going to be the solution, and it's so exciting to be in front of these incredible management teams and incredible businesses, and you know that they're solving big problems that will make this world a better place. So it's across the board, and we get excited because we truly believe in what these companies are doing and how they're disrupting the status quo.
And so, Jana, tell us a little bit about Disney at this moment, especially given, you know, you're obviously very bullish on Amazon, and Amazon is so much more than a media company. And yet, you know, you've got Disney and Amazon and Netflix all sort of vying for this next wave of streaming or dominance in the streaming world as we start to absorb and consume content in a different way. What makes you bullish on Disney?
Well, I think it's you know, it's a transition story, and one that is really seeking out this DTC, direct-to-consumer platform. And you know, you think about the brand, you think about the moat this company has in different different business mixes that it brings to the forefront within the consumer, you know, parks and media, entertainment company. And here's a phenomenal franchise that is selling at a discount to the market that has the potential to participate. And what you talked about, Jason, which is the long-term transition of media and content that you own. So they are the conduit. They control their own content, phenomenal management team, and they're sort of transitioning into these newer platforms, enabling themselves to win over the long term. So, you know, that's a name that has been a long-term holding for the portfolio, and one mm-hmm. that we think there's value to just given where we are in the marketplace today.
All right, going to leave it on that note. Jana, thank you so much. Jana Barton, Equity Portfolio Manager over at Eaton Vance, co-manager of the Eaton Vance Focus Growth Opportunities Fund. Ticker is EIFGX. And as I mentioned, just about in the 75th percentile over the past 5 years, so beating the majority of funds in terms of its peers in that category.
Yeah, 84th percentile over a year and 74th, as you said, both mm-hmm. five-year and year-to-date. And a really interesting, as you pointed out, I love the list of those names, like a really interesting mix of stocks there, and mm-hmm. and all obviously with a slightly different story, but it's always interesting to see what the mix is for a very successful fund like that.
All right, you are listening to Bloomberg Radio.
Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com. You can also listen to our radio show every weekday at 2 p.m. Eastern, only on Bloomberg Radio.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers.
Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts Gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Meet Gary. Gary's about to become an Einstein in an instant.
Whoa, Einstein hair. I like it.
That's right, Gary, because you're using Salesforce powered by Einstein AI to connect data, predict business trends, generate personalized content, and wow customers.
I do feel a lot smarter.
Because you're not just Gary anymore. You're Gary, empowered by Einstein AI.
Did you hear that, team? I'm an Einstein.
Oh, can I get a selfie?
The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.